guest this morning is New York Times bestselling author and Redmond resident Jane Kirkpatrick. Jane is the author of 40 books and 55 essays. Her works have sold over 2 million copies, and she has over 55 awards to her credit. She originally hails from Wisconsin, graduated from University of Wisconsin with a degree in communications and a master's in clinical social work. Wow, those are some impressive facts, Jane. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of The Point, and thank you for your time this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a great little run from Redmond to Bend this morning.
Well, so, it's always an adventure.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's start off by getting to know you a little bit. Give us the Reader's Digest version of your early years.
Growing up in Wisconsin on a dairy, and I have had an older sister and a younger brother, and the older sister came to Oregon in 1960, and every Christmas we would get out of school for Christmas break and get in the car and drive from Wisconsin to Junction City.
Oh, God.
Where my sister lived in the rain. And I thought, I'll never come back. But that was for 4 years we did that to visit them. And then I graduated from high school and came out to spend the summer with her. And wow, this is a great place.
And you decided to
stay.
And
I decided I wanted to come back at some point. And so 10 years later, I did.
That is awesome. So you worked as a mental health and early childhood specialist for the Warm Springs Indian Reservation, and you were also director of the Deschutes County Medical Health Program. But tragedy changed your lives. Share with us what changed your direction so abruptly.
Tragedy?
We're talking plane crashes here.
Oh. No, so, yeah, so my life had changed before that happened. The reverse of that is the trajectory. I was the director of the mental health program here in Bend, and then left that to move to what I called Rattlesnake and Rock Ranch on the lower John Day River.
And you're going to tell us about that in a
minute. Yes. Well, it was 160 acres of sagebrush and rattlesnakes, and my husband promised me there was a spring there, and we had about a quarter mile of John Day River frontage. But it's north, you know, so people think it's near the town of John Day, but it's actually closer to towns like Wasco and Condon. We were between Wasco and Condon. So we did that. We left our life here in Bend at that point and decided to develop a life there.
And why?
After the first why?
Why?
I think there were a couple reasons. One was my husband's oldest son had been killed, and I think he would have been 23. And I think there was a part of us that, particularly for my husband, that, you know, life is short, and you should live as fully as you can because you never know when that's not going to be a possibility. And he had always wanted to live somewhere where there was a year-round water supply and where he could hunt and fish. And, you know, and I was, you know, who was I? My favorite books when I was growing up were the Laura Ingalls Wilder series. So I was like a pioneering type. So eventually we made that decision. But it was also a spiritual decision to sort of trust. I remember thinking about it, and I decided it was like stepping out into a cloud of faith, believing I wouldn't fall through.
A quote from you said you didn't want to be 85 and sit around and say, remember when we almost did that?
Yes, exactly.
That is awesome. So tell us about Rattlesnake Ranch. Tell us about your experience homesteading.
It was the biggest leap, biggest risk of my life. I never would have thought I would have done that. And my parents, bless them, came out from Wisconsin, and I showed them this property. And we didn't actually go all the way down there because the road was horrible. It was, I called it the reptile road, and it twisted on down. It was dirt. It was 7 miles from the mailbox. And 11 miles from a paved road, but part of that was gravel, but none of ours was graveled. It was just dirt. Had big, deep ditches in there that it occurred to me at one point, oh, that's because water has rushed through there. What if I'm on the road when that happens? And we had made about, I don't know, 5 trips of stuff that we brought up. We built a hangar and a barn first with a generator because we didn't have power initially. So it was a lot like imagining what it would have been like for early pioneers, but it also was a a really important thought process that changed for me, because I had given my husband a year that within a year we would have a house, we wouldn't be living in this trailer with three dogs and two cats. We would have power, we would have running water instead of having to haul water from town.
Wait a minute, you had to haul water from town?
We did, drinking water initially, until we got to know people, because we didn't know anybody, and then our nearest neighbor was 7 miles away, and they said, well, you can get water from us. And so we would fill up this tank and get drinking water, but we took water from the river to wash clothes, which is its own story, with the washing machine and the dryer sitting outside. Anyway, so I knew that at some point we would have those things or I wouldn't be there. But as I began to read about a lot of pioneering women and became really interested in women's history, that I realized they didn't have that luxury of knowing it would get better. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about, where did they draw their strength from? Where was it? What were the... There's a great writer, Kim Stafford, who writes for... Anyway, he has his wonderful book that he wrote based on his coming to terms with his brother's death by suicide. It's called 100 Things Any Boy Can Do, or How My Brother Disappeared. And he has a section in there where he talks about all of us at some point get into the cellar of sorrow. And he said, and it's really a mark of our character how we climb up the ladder towards some sort of light, no matter how dim nor strange. And I began thinking about what were the rungs of the ladder that these women used to get out of their cellar of sorrow, whether it was because crop failure or because a child died, or if they were on the Oregon Trail, you know, sickness and illness and things they didn't have any control over. And so that became a real part of my writing, but also a real part of who I am, to keep looking for what are the rungs of the ladder.
Well, taking a step back, one of the rungs on your ladder, you mentioned a hangar. You actually got your private pilot's license?
I did.
And tell us about the plane crash.
So I was introduced to flying at a very young age. My parents were, my dad was part of the Flying Farmers Organization back in the Midwest. And so he had an Aronica sedan, and it seated, there were three people could sit in the back and then two in the front. And I always got sick because I couldn't stand the smell of gas coming up. So my mother kept an old Folger coffee can under the seat, and I would just get in and, you know, empty my whatever I had eaten into that, and then we would take off. And that was part of the, you know, the pre-flight activity.
The checklist
was that Jane's going to throw up. So it had always been a part of my experience, but it wasn't something I really looked forward to. Then my husband decided that in order to do this properly, to be able to get in and out of that branch, that we should each have our pilot's license. And he found this plane, and it was a French-built low wing. But anyway, we bought that plane, and then he got his license, and then he said, I should get my license. And so I started taking lessons out of Redmond, and I had an accident when I was recently soloed. And so after that, I never wanted to get in the plane again. But in order to move to this ranch and be able to land it, I knew I had to overcome this terrible fear that I had. And so I took more lessons of flying out of Redmond. And now when I take the dog on walks, I listen to people because I can hear them up above, and they're like practicing their stalls. And I think, yes, you know, just hang in there. But we did move to the ranch, and we had wonderful friends who had helped us put in the phone line for the second time. We had to dig a ditch 7 miles long twice because it didn't work the first time. And so they came to visit, and she was 7.5 months pregnant, Nancy. And we went up. We had to, every 2 years you have to fly and get with an instructor and get your sort of recertified. And we had done that in Le Grand because we had flown up there to visit some friends, and they had been with us. And on the way back, they sat in the back. She and her husband and Jerry and I were in the front. And as we came in to Wasco, it was determined that we had hit a clear air wind shear. You had to come in over the town and over these trees. And so we hit a clear wind shear, and my husband did everything he could to fly that thing down, but we crashed right at the end of the runway.
And you were both seriously injured.
We had lots of broken bones, but the gift was that our friends did not have any, and actually Nancy has no memory of that accident at all, for which is such a great gift. And the baby was born full term without even a little impression of a seatbelt in the middle of her forehead. So that was really good.
And your whole community of Sherman County came to your aid, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were wonderful. The people that we didn't even know came and helped us. And my parents, you know, came out and stayed with us. And I remember one day when there was a whole crowd, the women had brought food and covered our harvest table, and the men were out putting irrigation pipes. We had dug the ditches, but they were putting the pipes together, and we had plumber friends who were coordinating all this, and there were rattlesnakes, of course, in the ditches, and every now and then we'd hear boom because somebody would shoot one. and we were sitting on the deck with our three of our legs were in casts, and my arm and, you know, Jerry had broken both ankles and a hip, and I had fractured foot and arm and so on. But we were sitting there, and one of the ranchers came up, and he said, "How are you doing, Mr. Cheery?" And I said, "Not very well. This is just really, it's really hard to have other people have to take care of us." Mm-hmm. That was really hard. And I said, "You know, we'll never be able to thank everybody. There's people here we don't know." And he said, "Oh, Jane, you missed the point." He said, "We love doing this, and you give to us when you let us." And he said, "You know, you're right. You'll never be able to pay this back," because it was hot and there were snakes and whatever. And he said, "The best you can hope to do is pass it on." And I love that little, you know, this Keith Thompson, wonderful, you know, rancher. I just love that. And I have tried to do my best to pass it on.
And that actually lit the fire for your writing, right?
Yes, I would write letters, in fact, to the pregnant lady. We would write letters to them, and she wrote back at one point. We didn't have a phone yet, and she said, "You know, when we get your letters, we don't read them right away. We wait until after supper, and we turn off the TV, and then one of us reads them out loud because they're like a chapter in a book." And that was my first, like, oh, well, maybe I could write a book. Not about how to do this, because everything we did on that place was like a misery. You know, things broke down, and we had to go so far, and we used the phone at a local rancher's 7 miles away for a long time, and the dog would come and bark at boxes in the corner while I was using an outdoor phone. And years later, one of the rancher who owned that said, "You know what your dog was barking at? There was a big, fat rattlesnake living underneath there."
Again, so, with the rattlesnakes.
I know. So, I don't even know where I was going with that. But, I thought, well, I could write a book about following your heart, about taking a risk and trusting that you're not alone on this journey, and to try to live as fully as you can. And so that became Homestead. I had written and loved little sort of essays at the end of magazines, that, you know, 500-word essays, and I thought, I could do that. I couldn't imagine writing a book, but I could write 500 words at a time. And that's how I organized my thinking, and that's how I started writing novels as well. It's like, okay, well, I can write a chapter of, you know, I could write 1,000 words at a time and not get too scared about how long it is that these books have to be before you can get them sent to an editor. So,
How old were you when you wrote your first book?
So my first book came out the day before I turned 45.
Wow.
So that is a late bloomer. I love to talk to young people who are writing who know already that that's what they want to do. I mean, I loved words, and I wrote what I called wretched little poems when I was younger, but I didn't imagine. It really wasn't until I was the director of the mental health program here and would have to write a lot of letters to the state or to, you know, congressional people or, you know, words about mental health and concerns we had. And then people would call me and say, you know, no one's ever put it quite like that. And so I realized then that words had power, and I wanted to use them to make a difference. But I didn't think about writing for other people to read or novels until after we had moved to the ranch. And there were stories that tapped me on the shoulder, and they didn't let me go. So
would you consider your genre historic? Or Christian, or what do you consider your genre to be?
Storytelling. I think of myself as a historical novelist, primarily, yeah.
I love the quote from your website, which we're going to plug right now, jkbooks.com, and we'll repeat that again. "I like helping people from the distant past step from their generation into our own to teach us with their lives. So tell us about your research process when preparing to write a novel. How important is accuracy to you?
Well, detail and accuracy is what gives a reader authenticity. So if you want to have people look at your work and feel like it's authentic, then you have to be accurate. But a lot of women's stories, there isn't a lot of research written about them. You know, if, for example, I would come across a mention of some founding, let's say the founding of Redmond. I don't know who founded Redmond, but let's say I came across that and they'd say, you know, John Jones and his sons, William and George, and his wife and two daughters founded the city of Redmond. They won't even name his wife or daughters. And so women's history has its own exploration, let's put, to find out details and to find authenticity. And so I actually discovered the importance of relying on family stories. And so I was gifted, really, with being able to meet with descendants of most of the women I write about, because most of them are based in the lives of actual historical women. And the very first one was about Jane Shearer of Shearer's Bridge. And that particular book, I sat next to a man in Rufus at the Historical Society, and he said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm a writer." And I had that one book, Homestead, which is the memoir, and then essays, but I didn't really think of myself as a writer. I was a social worker working at Warm Springs and a rancher, but at that moment I was a writer. And he asked what I was working on, and I said, "I'm writing the story of Jane and Joseph Shear and their life with the Wasco, Warm Springs, and Paiute people." And he said, "Well, you should meet my cousin." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because she owns their property and she let you walk there." And she did.
In the last few minutes, what message might you like to leave our listeners with? And mention your website again.
So my website is jkbooks.com. And what I would like to leave listeners is that if you have a story that you think somebody else should write, because it's such a great story, that you should be the one to write it.